Hey, good morning, everyone. Welcome to the summer months here at BRS. Today I want to talk about a topic that we've spoken about a number of times in different venues here in the shul, but in my mind, it's one of the great epidemics of our generation, I should say my generation, and that is the inability to take responsibility for our actions. And that's going to be our punchline. Now, to get there, what I want to do is learn about the story of the Meraglim. So if you open up on page 800 of your Art Scroll Siddurim, we're going to learn a little bit together. Actually, I'll start at 798. Right at the beginning of the story, Vaydaber Adonai al Moshe Lemor, Hashem comes to Moshe and says, Shlach lecha nashim v'yasur es eretz kanan, asher ani nosein levnei Yisrael, ish echad l'matei avosav. Right, send forth these spies. They're going to go to the land, one person from each tribe. Vayishlach Osam Moshe Mimidbar Param Al Pi Adonai. Moshe does exactly as Hashem asked. Kula Manashim Roshe B'nei Yisrael Hema. And all these people were pretty righteous individuals, right? They were the heads of the tribes. Okay, and then it goes on to describe Pasuk Dalet. Ve'im Elash Mosam L'matei Ruvein Shemu Ben Zachor. And then it goes on to list all of the different representatives from the various different tribes. So, you have Hashem comes to Moshe, says we should have spies. Moshe jumps on the opportunity. He sends spies. And then, if you just glance at the rest of the page here on 798, the majority is a description of who the spies were, telling us exactly from each tribe who it was and who the parents were. Okay? Moshe gives the instructions on the bottom of page 798. And then, if you come to page 800, the spies come back. Pasuk 27. Let's start 26. Vayelchu vayavo el Moshe ve'el Aaron ve'el kol adas b'nei Yisrael el midbad paran kadesha vayashivu osam davar ve'es kol aida vayarum es priaretz. So they come back to Moshe and Aaron vayarum at priaretz, and what do? They show the fruits of the land. Now the fruits of the land obviously are supposed to be daunting. It's supposed to scare them. Okay? Vayisapru lo, Pasuk 27, and they tell them, Vayomru, and they say, Banu el haaretz asher shalachtanu. We did exactly as you asked, Moshe. Vigam zavas chalav udvashu, vizeh piriya. And you're right, Moshe. It's the land of milk and honey, and start of nation, and this is its fruit, it's all big, it's all good. Ephes. Now that's an Ephes with a capital A, because what does it mean? But. Right. However, okay, you always, sometimes you're in a conversation with someone, you know there's that but coming. Usually it's when someone starts an email, Rabbi, I just want to let you know there's so much good about the shul, we appreciate everything. You're just like blah, blah, blah. You're waiting for that however or but, right? So that's what we have here. Ephes, however, ki az ha'am ayoshev ba'aret. The people that live there are very strong. V'harim b'tzurok g'dolo me'od v'gam yiladei anak ra'inu sham, and it's fortified, and there are giants there. Amalek yoshev ba'aretz ha'negev v'achiti v'ayivusi v'emori yoshev bahar v'akanani yoshev ala yam v'al yada yardain. Right? You're surrounded on all sides. You have Gaza, you have Jordan, you have Lebanon, you have Syria, you have Egypt, you have Iraq, you have Iran, right? All around you. You're surrounded by people that, let's just say, don't want to invite you for a play date. So here we are. They've brought very large fruit. They've said how everyone is strong and it's fortified and it's surrounded by enemies. Pasuk 30 is kind of a parenthetical comment. Vayas Kalev Esa'am El Moshe. Kalev quiets everyone down. Now what's he quieting everyone down? We'll see in a second. Vayomer Alonale. He says, what are you talking about? Who cares? We're going anyways. We're going to go up because we can. Yes, we can. Pasuk 31. Ve'anashim asher alu imo amru. And now the other spies come back to him and say, what are you talking about, Kalev? Lo nuchal lo sesam. We're not going. We can't do this. Ki chazak humimenu. Because what's taking place there, the people are too strong for us. And they spread slanderous lies against the people in Israel. And they said, It's a land that eats its inhabitants. Now, what does exactly that mean? We'll have to see. How do you interpret that? I don't know, we've only read this our whole lives. Not good, I understand not good, right? Okay. So it's Eretz Ocheles Yoshvei. It's a land that consumes its people. V'chola ama shira'inu basocha anshei midos. And everyone who's there is an anshei midot. Now midot means what? So Rashi in Ramban and Ibn Ezra say it means very large people. Okay? Midah is a measurement, so it's very large people. V'sham ra'inu esa nefilim, b'nei anak, min nefilim, v'nihi, ben einenu kechagavim, and we were like grasshoppers in their eyes, v'chein ha'inu b'einehem. Very famously, what this is communicating is that they lacked belief in themselves. They didn't believe that they were able to do it. Perek Yedalet. So far, what's happened? The spies came back. They're saying very bad things about the land of Israel. And who is the sole defender of what's taking place there? Kalev, right? Kalev tries to interrupt it, and he is shut down very quickly. Now we go to chapter 14. Vatisa kol eidav eitnu kolam. Everyone starts crying hysterically. Vayivchu am balailahu. And that night, of course, that Tisha B'Av night, Hashem says, you cried at that night, I'll make you cry on this night for eternity. So they cry on that night. Vayilonu al Moshe ve'al Aron el kol b'nei Yisrael. Now, it pivots a little bit. Because up until, who have they been complaining about? The land. Now, they're coming to Moshe and Aaron. Moshe and Aaron, up until this point, are in the background. They're on the back burner of the conversation. They haven't been seen yet. Now, they're coming directly to Moshe and Aaron. Vayomru aleihem, and what are they saying? Lu masnu be'eretz Mitzrayim, obamid barazel, lu masnu. Halavai, we should have died in Egypt. Because it would have been better than what we're experiencing right now, or what we are about to experience. Because we are literally caught between a rock and a hard place. We're in a desert right now. It's hot, it's sweaty, it's cold. No matter what time of the day, it's uncomfortable. And where are we going? This promised land that you promised us is all of a sudden not so exciting anymore. Right, what do you got to bring us here? Just to be killed by the sword. To embarrass us, to take captive. We'd be better off if we returned to Egypt. Let's appoint a new leader and get out of here. Let's switch to plan B, go back to Egypt. It may not have been pretty, but at least we were alive. Now that we're going to the land of Israel, who knows what's going to happen? Pillage and rape and all these things that can happen in the land that they're describing. Moshe and Aaron, how do they respond? Pasuk 5, Vayipol Moshe ve'Aaron al pnehem. They fall immediately on their faces. Lifnei kol kahal adas b'nei Yisrael. V'Yoshua b'nun v'kalei ben Yifuneh mina tarim es ha'aretz kar'u b'gdehem. So Moshe and Aaron are flailing down. Kalev and Yoshua are ripping their garments. Vayomru al kol adas b'nei Yisrael lemor, and they say to the people, Ha'aretz asher avarnu bala surosa tova aretz meod meod. What are you talking about? The land is good. Don't listen to the other 10. Im chafetz banu adonai ve'yavi osanu al ha'aretz azos unisana lanu. If God's going to bring us there, Eretz asher hizavat chalav udvash, Ach barunai al timrodu, ve'atem al tirau es am haaretz, ki lachmeinu heim, tzar tzilam elehem ve'adonai itanu al tirum. You got nothing to worry about. The land is good, and even if you are worried, who's going to take care of us? None other than Hashem. And then the people say, we should stone them, we don't believe them, etc. Okay? Now, who is the initiator in this whole story? Who initiates the sending of the spies? Moshe is the initiator of this. No. Go to Pasuk 1. Vayidaber Adonai el Moshe lemor. Who initiates it? God comes to Moshe and says, Shlach lecha, send. Okay? Who? I understand. Vayidaber Hashem el Moshe lemor. Translate those words for me. Who initiates it? Hashem. I'm not presuming anything. I have the Torah in front of me. Okay? You're getting too fancy for me. Okay? Vaydaber Hashem Moshe Limor. The pasuk isn't, psukim don't lie. Hey, Hashem initiates a conversation. Now, it could be that there was a previous conversation where Bnei Israel had asked for it and Hashem now gives permission. But in the Torah itself, who's giving it? Hashem initiates the process. Then we see that the Torah lists the identity of the Meraglim. And in the response of the Meraglim, is it, who do you place the blame on? Whose shoulders do you place the blame on? You place the blame on the Meraglim. Right, the Meraglim come, they set the Jewish people know nothing. This is an obscure land that nobody really knows anything about. And all of a sudden, this group of 10 people come back, and they start telling everyone, fear-mongering. They start getting everyone nervous and upset. And then Bnei Israel react in a way that honestly you and I would probably react once we were told that this is where we're going. Okay? So who do you place the blame here? You place it on Moshe? Why?
He's the leader.
He's the leader. So you place it on Moshe because why? It's a good observation. Not only is he the leader, but where does he appear in the story? Close to the end. It's already a little too late at that point. Okay, everyone is already in like a hullabaloo. They're in a tizzy by the time Moshe Rabbeinu falls on his face. When was the time to interject? A lot earlier in the story. Who does that? Kalev, right? Kalev is the one who interjects immediately. Moshe and Aaron are silent. It's only later on that Moshe Rabbeinu begins to react. Okay? So that's a good observation. So you place it on Moshe. Any other options?
Am Yisrael.
Why do you place it on Am Yisrael? Okay, so you place it on Bnei Israel, because after all, they saw what happened in Yetzias Mitzrayim. How could you dream of going back there? Right? Like, do you not remember how bad it was? Now, you obviously are not familiar with the movie Shawshank Redemption. Have you ever seen the movie? Anyone see the movie? I usually don't quote movies, but it happens to be, it's one of the all-time greats. So in Shawshank Redemption, do you remember there's a scene, I forgot his name, but he's an elder man, it's a very sad scene, where he's let out of prison, and what does he do to himself? Hangs himself. Why does he hang himself? He write the voiceover is the note that he wrote. He said, I'm not made for freedom, right? I'm a prison guy. I did well in the structure of prison. Now, how could he say that? Freedom, you have the world as your oyster. The answer is that he didn't know what to do with himself. There's something consoling about the structure. I mean, I obviously don't understand this, but that's part of the point of the movie, is that he felt more comfortable behind the closed gates of the prison than the freedom of the outside world. Because freedom is opportunity, but it's also obligation, right? It requires initiative. In jail, you don't have to make any decisions for yourself. You're told when to eat, what to eat, how to eat. You're told when to go to the bathroom, how to, right? Everything is decided for you. Freedom carries obligations with it, okay? Which is part of why the Torah is so important. Because the Torah came along after we were free from Egypt, and Hashem said, I'm now going to give you a new set of restrictions. You're no longer going to be enslaved to Paro. Now you're going to be enslaved to me. I'm going to be the one who's going to dictate when you wake up in the morning, how you wake up in the morning, how you go to sleep at night. That's not going to be decided by Paro anymore. That's going to be decided by me, Hashem. Okay? So you blame Bnei Israel. Hey, who else? Yoshua. Why do you blame Yoshua? He hasn't said anything. Right? What you're really saying, I believe, if I can tweak it a little bit, is where's Yoshua in the beginning? Kalev is the one who jumps in. Vayas Kalev es ha'am el Moshe. Kalev is the one who, quiets everyone down. Rashi says, what's he quieting everyone down here? Hishtik el kulam. He quiets everyone down. And then the pasuk says, el Moshe. Didn't have to say that. Could have just said, vayas kalev, and quiets everyone down. What does it mean he quiets everyone down to Moshe? So Rashi says, lishmoa mashi yedaber b'Moshe. Everyone thought that Kalev was going to start ripping into Moshe. He was going to start roasting Moshe. And so when he quiets everyone down, they're like, ooh, I want to hear this. This is going to be some juicy roasting that's going on here. And once he quiets them down, what does he say? V'chizo bilvat asalanu ben Amram. Is this all Ben Amram? Obviously in a pejorative way. Is this all Ben Amram did for us? Says Rashi, Hashomeya hayasavar shebala saper bignuso. Everyone thought at this point that he was going to start ripping into Moshe. That he was going to start criticizing Moshe. And once he had what we call street credibility, then he starts saying, this, the Moshe who took us out of Egypt, who split the sea, who brought us the man, and you're not going to trust him that he can now create miracles for us and take us into the land of Israel? So Moshe, so according to Rashi, right, Kalev quiets the people down, and then he starts singing the praises of Moshe Rabbeinu. Now, why didn't the Jewish people recognize that on their own? Here they were, a couple of years ago, they had seen the miracles. They knew what Moshe could do. He was their miracle worker. He was their ace of spades, their trump card. How could they not remember it? So the answer is that oftentimes the extraordinary becomes ordinary. When you become so used to something, it stops becoming miraculous to you. And so the first time the Jewish people saw Moshe create a miracle, ooh. Second time, Third time, not so impressive anymore. Maybe he can't do it anymore. So the extraordinary suddenly becomes ordinary. This happens, by the way, all the time in our lives. I watch my children learn how to read. It's extraordinary. If you think about how the human brain works, that a child goes from complete gibberish, unable to verbally communicate, all of a sudden their mind starts, the wires start piecing everything together, and now they can create words. And then, when they first look on a piece of paper, it's literally Chinese to them. Okay? And then, letter by letter, and then they put two letters together, and it's amazing to see the human brain figure out how to read. It's an incredible miracle. I continue to be amazed by it. Usually happens sometime in between like EC4 and kindergarten, and then it like clicks. And all of a sudden, they're off, and you can't stop them from reading. And they're up till 10:30 at night because they can't consume the books fast enough. Now, when's the last time you paused in the middle of reading a book and said, isn't it amazing that my brain is able to put letters together and formulate, right? What was it? Hooked on Phonics worked for me, right? So when's the last time you sat there in bed at night and said, you know what, Hashem, Hooked on Phonics worked for me. Thank you that my brain is able to piece. Probably not in many years. Why not? Because that extraordinary thing that when you and I were 6 years old was miraculous, we take for granted that my brain is able to process words. It's a miracle, but we're so used to it, it's no longer miraculous. So that's in all likelihood how they forgot about Moshe, is because they're so used to Moshe. Moshe was a ubiquitous presence in their lives. It stopped being so exciting anymore because they're so used to it. And so they lost sight of how incredible Moshe Rabbeinu is. Now, none of you mentioned to me what is the most obvious of all of this, which is the Meraglim. The Meraglim are clearly the center of this story. When they come back, they're spreading lies, and they're kind of the impetus to everything bad that's about to happen. The Jewish people, all of their reactions, all because the Meraglim set them up for that. Now, you can place blame on Moshe's shoulders and say, why didn't Moshe react fast enough? Yoshua, we have to figure out exactly where Yoshua is in all this. Why was he absent at the beginning and only present later on? Okay, but I think at the core, it's hard to argue that the Meraglim are the epicenter of this story. Yeah, Ellie.
Maybe we could say that the reason why Yeshua's not
here is the only way that we
would listen to him is by thinking. I can't hear you. I'm sorry. The only way they would listen at all.
Yeah. Right. So Ellie said that maybe the reason why Yoshua is absent at the beginning is because if Yoshua were also quieting people down, No one would think that Yoshua, everyone knew Yoshua was the company man. No one thought that he was going to argue against Moshe. And so it was kind of a good cop, bad cop between Kalev and Yoshua. That's one possibility. In all likelihood, it's that Kalev and Yoshua represent two different paradigms of leadership. So for example, if you look, when they go into the land of Israel, Chazal tells the Gemara in Sota that Kalev goes to Hebron, to Davin. Where was Yoshua? So Yoshua was with everyone else. Okay, Kalev was more of like an independent-minded type leader. Yoshua, who's Mishamish Moshe, he is the consummate stay with the leader type of person. So they play different roles. Now, interestingly enough, Kalev does not become the leader, Yoshua does. You have to figure that out a little bit. Lots of people write about this. But clearly it's showcasing two different types of leadership. So whereas Kalev is not nervous to go out on his own here, Yoshua sticks with the pack. When does Yoshua react? After who reacts first?
Moshe.
Only when Kalev sees that Moshe reacts, only after Yoshua sees that Moshe reacts, then Yoshua comes forward. But he is clearly following Moshe's lead in this entire episode. Yeah. His leaders.
Maybe had more of the backing.
Yeah, could be. Yeah.
I think that part of it might be that Moshe overthought. They did not need to send that Meraglim. The first pasuk does not say it's a boy.
Okay.
So Moshe figures, I will stack the deck, I'll load up.
Right, and it goes bad. It goes bad, 100%. Caught him off guard. He thought these were his guys. He thought it was his guys. Right. Loses credibility also. Right. Okay, could be. Let's move on just quickly. We won't move on. Yeah.
Being prepared to be the future leader, okay, people would say, if Yoshua said it, well, it's in his personal interest.
So he was playing the long game. Okay, could be. All of this is yes. And a lot of this class is not to spoon feed you, but to give you food for thought, right? To give us, to get our minds working. A couple of more observations before we go on to the next point. Number one, Anshei Midos, just very interesting. Most commentaries understand that Anshei Midot means that they're very large individuals. Some commentaries explain it, though, as not Anshei Midot as large, but Anshei Midot as Anshei Melacha. In other words, Eretz Yisrael is a place where you have to work hard. That's what scared them. Don't forget, they're in the desert now. Everything is handed to them on a silver platter. They have their food. The Pasuk's going to tell us later on. Their clothes. They didn't have to go shopping. Right? There was a blissful, utopian life of sitting around under palm trees and sipping pina colada. Is that what retirement's like? That's what I'm looking forward to. How many years do I have? I don't know. Whatever my accountant says, right? But that, now all of a sudden, Eretz Yisrael is an Anshei Midos. It's a land that is directed by an agricultural cycle. It's a land where you have to work and toil, and it's not going to be easy. And that is what's making them nervous, right? Anshei Midos, Anshei Melacha, it's the hard work that's scaring them off. One last point is Vayas Kalev. When Kalev quiets them down, he doesn't really answer their questions. They come back and they say, yeah, it's a good land, but it's very large, and there are a lot of enemies around, and he lists a whole laundry list of things that are going to go wrong if we go into the land of Israel. And Kalev quiets them down, and he doesn't address any of it. What does he do? He ignores all of their arguments, and he simply says, Alo na'aleh. We're going to do it. Says the Yesh Kodesh, what the Piazetz Narebi, what Kalev is really saying is, you're right. Point A, point B, point C, you're right about all of it. And it doesn't matter. Because faith in God and going to the land of Israel is irrational. It doesn't make sense. It's illogical. But we're going to do it anyways. And that ultimately, if you think about it, more than anything else, captures the story of the Jewish people. How many times in our history have we been told either implicitly or explicitly that you can't do it? It doesn't make sense. And you know what we said time and time again? We're doing it anyways. Coming back to land of Israel, which was a wasteland, a barren desert for 2,000 plus years, and all of a sudden we come back and we say, no, we, despite that, we still want this piece of land. And we go and we make it sprout and flourish and this amazing land that it is now. No, that was illogical. It was irrational. And yet we said we wanted to do it anyways. I'm reading this great book by Tom Segev now about the British mandate, pre-founding of the State of Israel. And as you read it, it's amazing how illogical this whole enterprise was. You read the book and you just wonder to yourself, like, maybe taking Uganda or whatever, you know, maybe it wasn't so such a bad idea after all. Because it really made no sense to want this land. So now we obviously know that there's a historical connection to the land. But the fact that we believed that we can turn it into what it is today, completely illogical. But that's the story of our people. The story of our people is every time we were down and out, we came back, even though it didn't make sense. So that's the Yesh Kodesh writing in the depths of the Warsaw Ghetto and the horrors of the Holocaust, saying sometimes faith in the Jewish people is illogical, but we're going to do it anyway. Now, against all of this backdrop, and I want you to keep, you know, you have these little tassels. Keep the tassel on page 802, and then flip to page 944. Because we hear about the story of the spies once more in Tanakh, and that is in Sefer Devarim. Sefer Devarim, Parshas Devarim, when Moshe Rabbeinu is recounting the history of the Jewish people up until this point. So he records and repeats the story of the Meraglim. And we are going to read it now and highlight three significant discrepancies between the story in Devarim and the story in Bamidbar. And we're going to get to a very, I think, important punchline. Pasuk 22. So again, we're on page 944, Perek 1, verse 22 of the Parsha of Devarim. Says Moshe Rabbeinu, Vatikrevun Eli Kulchem, you all approached me, Vatomru, and you said to me, Nishlecha Anashim Lefanenu V'yachperu Lanu Es Haaretz. You approached me, and you said, hey, we have this great idea. Let's send spies to the land of Israel. Vayitav Beinai Hadavar. And Moshe says, it was good in my eyes. Ve'akach mikem shnei masar anashim ishechad la'shavet, and I took 12 people, one from each tribe. Vayifnu vayalu hahara. Let's stop right there. Who initiates it? The people. Who initiated it in our parsha? Hashem. Vayomer Hashem el Moshe. You and I can debate this ad mei v'esrim shana, but you're wrong. Okay? Right, so here it's very clear. Who does Moshe say approached him? It was the people who approached him. Who are the people that are sent as the spies? Well, we know they're Anashim. It doesn't say Chashva people. It says Shnei Masar Anashim. One person from each tribe. Who are these people? Well, we don't know that. How do you know? I don't assume anything. Who are these people? So in Parsha Shlach, in our Parsha, so we know that they're Roshei B'nai Yisrael Hema. Okay? But in Parshas Devarim, Moshe doesn't tell me anything. He just tells me that they're people. And does he list the people's names? No. So in Shlach, he lists the people's names. A boring laundry list of people. And in Devarim, it just says one person from each tribe. So we already have two significant discrepancies. Number one is it's the people initiated. Number two is the Meraglim themselves aren't as important as they were in Parsha Shlach. I'm just going to have to hold you for a second because I'm going to run out of time. Okay? So here, they are, their names are not important. It's them as an entity. But the individuality of them is much less important. Okay? Pasuk 24. So they go up, Vayavoa Nachal Eshkol, Vayiraglu Osa, Vayichu Biyadam Mipri Haaretz, they bring the fruit of the land, Vayoridu Eleinu, they come back to us, Vayashivu otanu davar vayomru tova haaretz asher anaya Eloheinu nosein lanu. This land, the land of Israel, is amazing. It's great. I'm so excited to go there. Velo avisem la'alos. Pasuk 26. What does velo avisem la'alos mean? You didn't want to go up. Vatamru SP Adonai Eloheichem. Vatamru is from the language of rebellion. You rebelled against God. Vateragnu Baalechem. Vatomru besinas Adonai Osanu Hotzianu Me'er Titraim. And you went back to your tents that night and you said, only because God hates us does he want to take, did he take us out of Egypt to bring us into this despicable, horrific, horrendous land. Pasuk 28. Ana anachnu olim achenu heimasu es levavenu lemor. Right? And it's only because, right, our ana anachnu olim achenu heimasu es levavenu. Our brothers, namely the spies, so they made it despicable in our hearts by telling us, am gadol v'ram mimenu arim gedolot, that it's a land that's daunting, it's scary. Okay? And then, va'omar alechem, Moshe says, and I quieted you down. I calmed you down a little bit by telling you, don't worry, Moshe is going to take care of you. Now, if you go on to the next page, you'll see that the whole discrepancy of Kalev and Yoshua continues to play out. But that's not our topic for now. Who is, well, let's start with this. What is the response in Parshas Devarim? Okay, so again, initiation in Shlach, it's Hashem. In Dvarim, it's the people. The Meraglim in Shlach, laundry list. In Dvarim, barely mentioned. What's the response? So in Parsha Shlach, we had a whole slew of explanations for who was at fault. Was it Moshe? Was it? At its core, the Meraglim come back, and what kind of report do they give about the land of Israel? Negative. In Parshas Dvarim, what kind of report do the Meraglim bring about Israel? Very positive. It's only positive. What did they say? Vayomru tova aretz asher Adonai Eloheinu nosein lanu. This land is a great land. It's a beautiful land. It's got potential. It can bear fruit. It's going to grow and sprout and turn into a startup nation. And who then responds to that positivity? Pasuk 26. It's in your face now. Velo avisem lalos. Who's the velo avisem lalos? Read Art Scroll. But you did not want to ascend. Vatamru es pi Adonai Eloheichem. And you rebelled against Hashem. So you have two very different stories. Story number one, who is the focal point? None other than the Meraglim. And that's why the Meraglim's names are mentioned. They are the focus of it. They bring back a very negative report. In Parshas Devarim, the Meraglim are in the background. They're less important to the story. Their names aren't mentioned. They get one little pasuk, and even the report that they bring is, I'll get it in. Even the report that they bring is a positive report. Who is at fault in Sefer Devarim? Bnei Yisrael. Bnei Yisrael are at fault in Sefer Devarim. Now, why would the Torah portray one story in two very different ways? That's the million-dollar question. Well, let's see. Who are we talking to in Parsha Shlach? It's the generation that left the land of Egypt. Okay. Who are we talking to in Parshas Devarim? The generation that's going to go into the land of Israel. Shlach and Devarim are serving two different roles. Parshas Shlach is a historical account of how it happened. Parshas Devarim, Moshe doesn't care about repeating the historical account of how things happened. What does he care? What is his point? He's teaching a lesson to a generation that's going to the land of Israel. And what lesson does Moshe Rabbeinu want to communicate to this generation that's going to the land of Israel? Responsibility. responsibility. Don't pass the buck. Don't shift the blame. But you have to take responsibility. Now, might it be true that Moshe Rabbeinu should have done more as a leader? Perhaps. Might it be true that the Meraglim set the Jewish people up for failure? That might be true. But ultimately, says Moshe Rabbeinu, who and who alone is responsible? You, the Jewish people. Va'ta'anu, velo avisem la'alos. You did not want to go up. Va'tamru es pi'adonai Elohechem. And you rebelled against Hashem. So yes, circumstances put you in a precarious situation. Circumstances put you in a place that certainly sets you up for failure. But ultimately, who does the responsibility lie on? Whose shoulders does it lie on? You have to take responsibility for yourself. You have to take responsibility for your mindset. As we always say, happiness isn't an emotion, it's a choice. Right? You choose what your reaction should be. And that's the message that Moshe Rabbeinu wants to give to a generation that's going to the land of Israel. Stop making excuses. Stop blaming other people. But ultimately, who are you taking responsibility? You have to take it for yourself. Now, I'll prove it to you in a number of different cases. Go back to to Parsha Shlach. This time, go all the way to page 816. The Parsha very famously finishes off with talking about tzitzis. Hey, tzitzis. Pasuk 816, we read in Shema three times a day. Vayomer Adonai el Moshe lemor. Who initiates this? Can't argue, it's the people. It's Hashem, right? That's my point. So Hashem comes to Moshe. Daber b'nei Yisrael ve'amart aleihem. Asu lem tzitzis. Right, you should make tzitzis on garments. Ve'ayah lechem letzitzis risem oso. You're supposed to see them. Uzchartem, and you're supposed to remember them. Ve'asitem osam. Velo sasuru acharei levavchem ve'acharei nechem. Do not chase after your heart and your eyes. Of course, the eyes see and the heart covets. Asher atem zonim acharehem, which lead you astray. Says Rashi on that pasuk. Velo sasuru kemo mitur haaretz, like spying out the land. In other words, our parsha's bookended by this word, lasur. In the beginning of the parsha, it's the Meraglim who are going to look after the land. At the end of the parsha, it's the eyes that are going to lead a person astray. So says Rashi, halev ve'einayim, hey Meraglim leguf. In the same way that there were spies who led the Jewish people astray, so our heart and our eyes are what lead us as individuals astray. That's what Rashi's telling us. That there's a connection. It's not just random that the Parsha of Tzitzis appears in our Parsha. But there's more to that. Because what we're talking about is about responsibility. What word here do you notice that should jump out at you? Again, here we're talking about the eyes and the heart. In other words, what essentially the Pasuk is setting us up for is saying, Hashem, it's not my fault. It's not my fault that I looked at this or that I thought this or that I wanted this. After all, who created me? You created me, God. You created me with a heart and an eye and a mind and a desire and a Yetzirah. So when I sin, who is culpable? Who is accountable? It's you, Hashem. It's your fault. And yet what word jumps out at you in this pasuk, which is not an accidental word? Velo sasuru acharei levavchem ve'acharei nechem. Hashem says, don't let yourself go astray. And if you want to come and blame me, because after all, I created with Yitzhara, Asher a Tem zonim achareya. Who ultimately is responsible? Atem. You. Yes, I created you with Yitzhara, but that doesn't give you an excuse. That doesn't mean that you can blame me. Ultimately, who is accountable? Who is responsible? You. And only you are responsible. And so the Latur at the beginning of the Parsha, in the Velo Taturu at the end of the Parsha, is the same idea. It's about accountability. It's about responsibility. It's about taking ownership for your actions and not shifting the blame to someone else. Now, we have other stories like this in Tanakh. Most famously, what story? Right at the beginning of the Torah. Right at the beginning of the Torah. Adam and Chava. Right? Hashem gave them one very simple rule, and they can't live up to it. It goes astray very quickly. They eat from the tree that they're not allowed to. And when Hashem comes to Adam, what does he say? Vayomer ha'adam ha'isha shirnatate imadi. He not nali. Right? The woman that you created, it's her fault. She made me do it. And then, the next pasuk, Vayomer Adonai Elohim la'isha mazos asisa. God says, okay, the woman's fault. So, Chava, what happened? And what does she say? Hanachash hasiyanu. It's the snake's fault. So what's everyone doing? They're playing the blame game. Everyone's shifting the blame to someone else. Okay? Says the Medrash, Amar Adam Livnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Adam says before God, Ribon Kol Alamim, Master of the Universe. Kishehayisi Levadi. When I was by myself, Lo Chatasi Lecha, I didn't sin. Ella, Shehayisha, Sheheveta Etzli. The woman that you created. God, it's your fault. Right? By the way, this is exactly what Parsha Shlach is addressing. Right? God, you created me with the Yetzer Hara. It's your fault that I sinned. And Hashem looked back at us and said, No, it's actually your fault. Right? So here, Adam comes to God and says, right, I was fine on my own, but you had to mess it all up. You created women. She is the one who led me astray. And how does Hashem respond? In Pasuk Yud Zayin over there, Uladam Amar Ki Shamata Likol Ishtecha. Shamata means what? You listened to her. Vatochal Minayitz. And she didn't eat it. She didn't put a gun to your head. You ate it. Asher Tzivi Sicha Lemor, lo sochal mimena, that I commanded you, right? And then he says, Arur, arura adama ba'avurecha. The land will be cursed, ba'avurecha, means because of you. So Adam tries to shift the blame to Chava. Chava shifts the blame to the snake. Adam blames God. And what does God look back at him and say? Kishamata. No, my friend. You listened to her. Vatochal, you ate it, and therefore I'm going to curse the land, ba'avurecha, because of your actions. Okay, ultimately, the Torah is a narrative of human accountability. Yes, God creates things that could potentially lead us astray. We have a Yetzer Hara. We have our heart, classically, means desires. Our eyes, we desires. But ultimately, we are responsible for our actions, right? V'lo avisem. Lalos. Hashem says in Sefer Devarim, the Meraglim didn't force you. Velo avisem lalos. You didn't want to go up. Right? Vatamru es pi Adonai lechem. You are the one who rebelled against Hashem. Vayishma Adonai es kol divreichem. Hashem, when he punishes you, listens to your words as kol divreichem. Now, there are other stories as well that talk about this idea of responsibility. Where do we see it also in a very famous fashion? Cain and Hevel. Right? Cain kills Hevel. Hashem approaches him and says, Hey, Hevel Achicha, where is Hevel your brother?
Am I responsible?
Hashomer Achi Anochi. Am I responsible for my brother? Says the Medrash similarly. Amar Ani Haragti Oso. Cain says to Hashem, you think I killed him? Barata bi Yetzirah. You created me with an evil inclination. You created mankind with jealousy. It's your fault. Ata shomer es hakol. You, God, are in charge of everything. Veli hanachto so lahargo. You allowed me to kill him. It's your fault, Hashem. Atahu sharagto. You, God, are the one who killed. Can you imagine the chutzpah? Cain says to Hashem, you killed him. She'arakta she'ilu kibalti korbani kamoso lo'ayisi mitkanebo. Had you just accepted my sacrifice, none of this would happen. So God, don't tell me that it's my fault. Really, Hashem, it's your fault. It's the exact same argument that Adam made, right? You created me with the Yetzer Hara. You created mankind with certain temptations, with things that are going to potentially lead us astray. But ultimately, who's responsible? We're responsible for our actions. We're accountable for our conduct. We have to take ownership over who we are and who we become, and we can't blame life circumstances. We can't blame the circumstances that surround us. We can't blame other people. Ultimately, who we are and who we become is our responsibility, and we're accountable to ourselves. It's a very important concept. Well, that's why I said, I started off by saying this to me is the greatest challenge of our generation, where people want to shift the blame for their own behavior and blame it on other people. Right? I'll give you some examples. So this is, I once used this in a drusha, but it's, I love it. There's a book called The Terrible Truth About Lawyers. Any lawyers in the room? Okay? You'll be offended. Okay, so the book is called Terrible Truth About Lawyers. And he cites several what I think are very humorous examples about shifting responsibility, shirking responsibility. So number one, he says a California woman was driving a Porsche after having had several drinks. While driving 60 miles an hour in a 25 mile an hour zone, she had an accident in which her passenger was killed. Tragic. Porsche was ordered to pay $2.5 million for having designed a car that was too high performance for the average driver. In other words, it's not the woman's fault. Whose fault is it? It's the car's fault. Next example, in Maryland, two men tried to dry their hot air balloon in a commercial laundry dryer. I don't know who does that. But the dryer exploded, injuring them slightly, and they ended up winning almost $900,000 in damages. In other words, morons, what made you think that you should put a hot air balloon in a dryer? But it's the dryer's fault, not theirs. And then, very famous case, 1992, Stella Liebeck, 79-year-old woman from Albuquerque, New Mexico, ordered a 49-cent cup of coffee from the drive-thru window at McDonald's. Liebeck parked her car, placed the coffee between her knees, and in the process of adding cream and sugar, it's always the cream and sugar, she spilled the entire cup of coffee on her lap, leaving her with third-degree burns up and down her legs. She sued McDonald's, accusing them of gross negligence for selling coffee that was, quote, unreasonably dangerous, and she was awarded $2.86 million. Because after all, it's the coffee's fault and not her fault. That's the story of the Meraglim. Right? The Meraglim in our Parsha is a historical recollection. It's the Torah telling us historically what happened. And so yes, Hashem, whether he initiates it or gives permission to it, the Meraglim are mentioned. The Meraglim are the center of the story. And yet, when Moshe communicates it to the Jewish people in Sefer Devarim, the Meraglim are a side story. They're on the periphery. Why? Because who becomes the story in Sefer Devarim? The people. Moshe Rabbeinu is utilizing the story of the Meraglim, not just to repeat and to recount historical events, but he wants to teach them a lesson. He's saying, in Egypt, were you responsible? No, because you were in a really bad situation. In the desert, were you responsible? No, because God took care of everything. But you're about to go into the land of Israel. And you're going to now have to be responsible and accountable for who you are. That's what it means to take ownership over yourself. And so Moshe Rabbeinu is teaching them a lesson. So the discrepancy between Shlach and Devarim is not simply, oh, the Torah in one place said X details, another place said Y details. But it's really a story about this concept called accountability. It's what we call in Hebrew, achrayus. It's about taking responsibility and accountability for our actions, for who we are, and who we become. And so the Torah sets us up for this discussion, because in Devarim, it's not about the Meraglim. And it's not about Hashem. It's about the people, and about who they are and who they want to become. And that's the message that Moshe Rabbeinu wants to leave them with at the end as they're going to the land of Israel. I'll lead you with one final story just to contrast this. The story of the lawyers, right, placing blame on others. So there's a famous story of Rav Isser Zalman Meltzer, who once went to visit Rav Shalom Shwadron. Now at the time, there was a man in the community that was not treating someone else particularly in an appropriate way. And so Rav Shwadron used his Dvar Torah and Mincha Ma'ariv to speak about that. And he goes into this whole thing about how we're supposed to treat everyone respectfully and responsibly and with kindness and with Derech Eretz. And at the end of the speech, so everyone else is sitting there, like most men here sit for Mincha Ma'ariv. They're looking at their watches and they go on to Ma'ariv and they're totally unfazed and unmoved. At the end, Rav Isser Zalman Meltzer comes running over to Rav Shwadron and he says to him, I know you were speaking to me the whole time. Thank you so much for giving me that rebuke and that constructive feedback. Now, Rav Shwadron wasn't talking about Rav Isser Zalman Meltzer, but that's the difference between leaders, tzaddikim, and those who are always going to remain the person that they are. Rav Isser Zalman Meltzer heard and he said, oh, what can I do? How can I be better? How can I take responsibility for myself? How can I change? How can I improve? The other people listened to that and said, oh, that's a really important message for the guy sitting next to me. He's not talking to me. He's, right, by the way, we get this all the time after drushes. Rabbi, that was such a great message. My neighbor really needed to hear that. Right? But that's the mindset. The mindset is we shift the blame, we shift the accountability, we shift the responsibility. It's not about me and my need to improve, but it's the other guy because they're imperfect and they need to improve. Ultimately, what Hashem demands of us, what Hashem asks of us, what we were gifted through the notion of free will, of Bechira Chafshis, is that we are ultimately responsible for our actions, we're responsible for who we are and who we want to become, we're responsible for our relationship with Hashem, and it's not acceptable to blame life circumstances, it's not acceptable to blame Hashem, but ultimately it is we and only we that are responsible. Everyone have